civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Thrive World. It's Ray here. It's good to have this opportunity to do another lockdown podcast, as we say. I hope you're all doing well through this challenging, difficult time. And I'd like you to join me in welcoming the very beautiful Victoria Spence, who you'll all know and love from her terrific portrayal as Selene in The Tribe. Good morning, Victoria.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Tori. It's nice to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you. It's, yeah, lovely to hear your voice too.
That's good. And it's and you're kind of in I'm in Australia, as a lot of the listeners know from the other podcasts. And you, Tori, you're up in Auckland in NZ?
I am up in Auckland with my husband and my two little boys. We are in lockdown at present time and enjoying each other's company.
It's nice. And the listeners will be intrigued to know that you've become a mother. You've got a little three-year-old and a one-year-old, eh?
That's right. My oldest son, Matthew, has just turned three, and my little boy, Jack, will be turning one at the end of May.
Wow, that keeps you busy, I bet. That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And do you go these walks looking for bears, do you? Is that on the car?
Yes, bear hunt. We've been doing that quite a bit, actually, to keep my three-year-old entertained. We read the story, going on a bear hunt, and then we traipse around our local area and try and find all the teddy bears in the windows.
No, I have to say, Tori, for the listeners, forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I did a podcast interview with Danny James, and I said to Danny, what are you up to today? He said, oh, we're going on a bear hunt. And I was too embarrassed to pick him up, and I said, oh, really, maybe he's had too much to drink or he's going mad. Bear hunt. I thought, I took it literally, you know, but that's nice, actually. So everybody has bears in the window, and that's lovely for the kids.
It's such a great little thing for people to do, and it's spread around the social media in New Zealand. I'm not sure, obviously, around the world, but it's been wonderful, actually, because it gives all the little families with young children something to do. And around Easter time, we did the similar thing where everyone was putting up pictures of Easter eggs in their windows, so the Easter bunny knew where to go.
That's lovely. I should just say to the listeners, if they hear these birds, there's nothing I can do about it. So I'm sorry about the quality of the sound. I was saying to Tori before we started to record that, I'm kind of in a place where I have to sit here where the Wi-Fi is better. There's nowhere else I can go, just in the current circumstances. But the downside is that the upside is that Wi-Fi is great. The downside is all the birds are here. So I'm sitting there like Dr. Doolittle, Tori.
It sounds lovely. It sounds like a backup orchestra.
That's right. It's quite amazing. I'm normally used to, doing atmosphere. The listeners will be interested when we're in post production, that we sit in a mixing suite, and we'll bring up the birds or the wind, or we can do sound effects. And my instinct is to say turn those birds down, but I can't do that. So I'm getting very frustrated. So Tori, what do you do with yourself all day in this lockdown period? What have you been up to?
We're really just entertaining my three-year-old and trying to make sure my one-year-old's not putting anything in his mouth that he shouldn't be. But we, being a primary school teacher, I'm quite lucky because I've got quite a few resources at home. So I spent the first couple of weeks doing a lot of baking and Play-Doh and games that I had tucked away in my teaching treasure trove. But more recently, lots of walks. Hopefully next week when we get to expand our little lockdown bubble, we'll be able to see his grandparents, the boy's grandparents, which will be lovely. But really, yeah, just a lot of running around. Matthew is very much into playing chasey and playing dinosaurs and all those sorts of things.
And Tori, so that, again, the listeners will be fascinated that after the tribe, you went on to you got your degree at university and didn't know what to do, and then you got into teaching. Was that by accident, or was something you'd always wanted to do, or how did you get involved in teaching?
Funnily enough, I actually got inspired by the wonderful Jill, who was one of our correspondence school teachers down at when we were filming Tribe. She was an amazing support to me when we were doing correspondence school, and obviously it was quite difficult doing high school and filming. And Jill was really supportive, and I think I don't think we ever had a specific conversation about me getting into teaching, but I always admired my teachers that I have had in the past. And then I suppose once I finished doing public relations and I kind of felt that wasn't quite me, I saw that I could do, being that I had a couple of degrees behind me, I could do a 1-year teaching course. And obviously at that stage I was a mature student and I thought it would be lovely to go back to university. And so I tossed up between doing early childhood and primary and primary school teaching, and I decided to go with primary, and I was so happy that I did, because I think I studied in 2010 to do teaching, and I started the next year and it was amazing. I've loved it ever since.
And so primary, what age is that, Tori? Is that
so I can teach that with the degree, the primary school degree in New Zealand, you can teach from year zero, obviously. So I can do early childhood up to year eight. So that's intermediate. So just before high school starts.
No, I applaud all the teachers in the world and yourself included, Tori. I think education is the greatest legacy, and must be wonderfully a job satisfaction, I bet.
Huge amounts of job satisfaction and great work stories, and kids are always they keep you on your toes, so it's definitely lots of fun. I have to admit it was quite hard when I was heavily pregnant with both the boys getting up and down off the mat when I was teaching the little ones, but apart from that, no, it was lots of fun. I've met some wonderful people and wonderful families through teaching as well.
And Tori, you mentioned about public relations. What did you do in public relations? What did that entail?
So I was working for I wasn't in-house. I was in a company that specialised primarily in business public relations. So we worked for some pretty big clients, actually, from Singapore Airlines through to different pharmacies, Symantec, Intel. So it was really interesting, and it was a real learning curve for me because I was straight out of university. And dealing with the business world. But unfortunately, I just don't think the fit was quite right for me. I would have been better probably suited in consumer PR. And I think it was one of those things. I was working with some amazing people, very, very intelligent people who kept me on my toes. As I say, I don't think the fit was quite right. So I think after about 4 years, would that be right? I think about 4 years, I decided to pull the pin. I wanted to go overseas, and I thought that would made a natural kind of end to it all. So went overseas for about 6 months, and then I came back at the beginning of a year, and that's when I started teaching.
Did you go to Europe, was it? Or?
Yeah, actually. So I started, this was in 2009, I think. My sister and I actually went over to Peru, and we worked in an orphanage for nearly a month. And then my sister came home, and I continued on to Europe, and went all over the show, actually. I think I was in the UK and went to see some friends and went to see my cousins in Germany and into Italy and things. So, yeah, it was beautiful.
Well, that's lovely. So you clearly like travelling. That's fascinating. And so the orphanage in Peru, what was that like? How did that come about?
It was actually just through a company that still operates out of Peru, out of Cusco. They do many different types of volunteer work, but we did... we decided to work at the orphanage. My sister and I both love children. And it basically entailed us, we lived in a volunteer house, which was great. And then we would travel out into over the hills in Cusco and went to an orphanage and would spend the day there. Really, it was about interacting with the children, and they would teach us funny phrases and we would try and teach them a little bit of English, and we'd really just play with them, to be honest, and we'd bring them supplies. It was a really eye-opening experience, but it was amazing, really amazing, something I'll remember forever.
Isn't that terrific? I mean, that's interesting. When you're speaking, you sound just like Celine. That's something I could imagine Celine would have done.
We had lots of similarities, we did.
You do, actually. That's interesting. I mean, that kind of nurturing, caring side that you that I recognise in you, Tori, when you first came on board, and you first came into my life when William Shatner's A Twist in the Tale on the episode The Duelist with Ryan Runciman, who also went on to The Tribe, of course. And so how old would you have been then, Tori? About 12, maybe?
I think I was about 13 when we did The Duelist, because I actually think that was the beginning of 98. And then at the end of 98 is when we started Tribe, or at least the promotional stuff. So it was a real whirlwind year for me, because I had so much fun doing The Duelist and meeting and getting to fence with William Shatner, who was turned into being one of my favourite actors when he went on to do Boston Legal and things like that as well. Yeah. And then we started The Tribe, obviously, which was just, you know, the most fabulous 5 years. I don't think many teenagers can say they grew up the way we did, which was pretty amazing.
I bet. And Tori, had you always wanted to, as a little girl growing up, had you always wanted to be an actress and get into performing?
I can't remember having making a decision saying this is what I want to do. But I remember my sisters and I, we used to make programs and put on performances for my dad and my mum. And we always used to, my mum and dad actually used to run the Mercury Theatre in Auckland many, 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 many moons ago. Oh. And so we used to go to shows all the time. And I think maybe that's probably where it planted the seed.
Yeah, you grew up in that environment. And you, when you say sisters, you've got how many sisters?
I've got two older sisters, Caroline and Ellie, Alexandra, who are my older sisters. So I'm the baby of the family.
Well, that's terrific.
And
what was it? I mean, so William Shatner, he was tremendous. I mean, I was a big fan of his, with him being Captain Kirk, of course. And as you rightly say, he was wonderful in Boston Legal. But what a lovely man William was.
Lovely. And I remember being so nervous when we had to do that scene where I actually had to fence with him. And he was just so lovely and calm and patient and just friendly. And obviously at the time, I knew he'd been Captain Kirk, but obviously I wasn't a big fan of the show at that time, or knew the kind of the star power that he had. And it was only until I was probably a bit older that I realised what an amazing kind of person and what an icon he had been or is.
He's just a legendary icon in the Star Trek universe and just quite an amazing man, really. I mean, it was a real joy to work with him, and wonderful experience for you, Tori.
It really was. And then obviously moving on to toward the end of year when we started Tribe and getting to meet all the wonderful cast members who I am still, so many of them get to talk with, you know, a lot of the time and during the week and still keep in touch, which is really nice.
Well, that's lovely. And you know, when we were developing The Tribe, that's when we were shooting the William Shatner's Twist and the Tale. And I looked at both your performance, actually, and also Ryan's. And I thought, oh, you know, that's I could see a quality in you, Tori, and I thought, oh, you'd be ideal for Celine. So we were delighted that you then went on to The Tribe. And what was that like? So you then moved from Auckland as a young lass, an early teen, down to Wellington. And I often say it's like going into the army, isn't it, really? Because you had to go to cast houses and you had house parents and schools and a little tribe school, as you had referred to your kind of correspondence tutor. That would have been, how was that for you? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was, I mean, there were obviously times when it was harder because it was, we were working lots, but in the same respect, I just think it was one of the most phenomenal experiences for me. And when I look back, I think about the friends that I made. I think about the wonderful times I got to have on set, even down to the awesome costumes and fantastic makeup and the things that we got to do. You know, not many 14-year-olds get to move away from home, and I've always been an independent person. And I feel like the opportunity of getting to move into the cast house, obviously initially with the girls, where we had just the girls' house, that was so fun. And we had such an amazing sisterly bond. And we lived and worked together, and not many people can say they do that with their girlfriends. And then when we obviously moved into the different cast houses as the series went on, it was just wonderful being able to hang out with the guys. And we had always amazing cast houses, so we really lived the dream.
that it is. I often say it's like a family. It's a tribe within a tribe, really. And it is. It's quite extraordinary where, as with a family, you can, you know, you don't have to see each other every day, but you can pick up from where you left off. And it's quite extraordinary. And it's very special. And Tori, you did some tours to Europe, didn't you? You did a tour to Europe.
I did a trip to Europe, and I did one to, I think it was Atlanta. So I did a Dragon Con, and then I did one of the trips to Atlanta, to Europe with Mikey and Meryl and Caleb. And I can't remember. My memory is terrible, but I think that was right.
Maybe Danny went. We did so many of them. And how was that for you? Did you enjoy that?
That was incredible as well. I mean, again, being able to travel with your friends, and yes, I know we were working, but it didn't feel like work. We got to ride in a sleigh through the snow. I mean, it was phenomenal. And we got to meet all the fans. And obviously, being over in New Zealand, where a huge amount of our fan base is over in Europe, getting to meet people face to face, and hearing about how the characters' storylines had helped them, that was a real big thing for me, because obviously Celine, at the time I did find bits of it quite hard, because Celine definitely had some rough storylines. Like, she was the one that went through the bulimia and the suicide attempt and various other things that she had to go through. But actually meeting the people that it affected in a positive way was just amazing. And again, something I'll remember forever and really hold close to me.
You know, I think you did so well on that, Tori, if I may say, because it's something I'm personally very proud of, because, you know, with the tribe, I never wanted it to be apocalyptic or negative. I wanted it to be really replicating the world we inhabit, or more particularly young people inhabit, and to kind of mirror the life from all the issues, the social issues, from bulimia, teenage pregnancy, I mean, depression, suicide, all of this. And your character, and again, it's a testament to your innate kind of, I think, talents as an actress, but also as a person, Tori, you have for that innate nurturing side and an empathetic. I mean, it's difficult to describe, really, but, you know, your character helped a lot of people. You probably had a lot of letters yourself, but we used to get inundated with, you know, the tribe reassured so many, it gave comfort, and that's, again, educationally. I mean, we tried to, not in a boring way, to educate and inform, but to not sanitize the world, but to say, look, we do understand, and that's terrific. So they were pretty heavy, as you rightly say, some pretty full-on storylines you had to endure, and you cope with that remarkably well, I think.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, it was an amazing time. And I do have to say, I loved the growth that Celine especially went through, because in the early stages, obviously, she did have these quite intense storylines, but I loved how she developed. And I remember coming back, I think I had just sat my last year of high school, and I came back, and it was the only time I missed filming, when I was sitting my bursary exams. And I came back, I think, 2 weeks before after filming had started. And I remember coming back, and Celine had this new sense of strength in her storyline and her personality. And it was wonderful, because it kind of aligned with where I was in life as well. Finishing high school, I felt really comfortable in my skin. And it was obviously me not having gone through all the things that she had, but being able to kind of go on this journey with her and finishing off Tribe 5 with this kind of newfound strength and gumption. And yeah, it was lovely.
Isn't that lovely then? It's interesting, you know, Tori, as you'll know, our kind of catchphrase isn't the right word. I suppose it's thematic when we keep saying KTDA, keep the dream alive. And people say, what does that really mean? And for me, it means to overcome adversity, triumph, to keep going, never give up, whatever your dream is. And the dream for me, and you now as a mum, I'm sure, is, you know, to when with your children, you want to, the legacy that your children will inherit is better than our one, and the world, what kind of world are we planning? You know, it's building a better world. That for me, as an old hippie, was the genesis, the kind of inspiration of the tribe. And for your character, I mean, Celine, through adversity, triumphed, and that's the dream. So it's quite interesting. So I'm calling you by a character name now, but sorry that. That are you an anxious person at all or not?
I would say I've definitely struggled with a bit of anxiety, but I don't tend to be in my everyday life. I suppose I've had moments of, especially probably toward my latter teenage years. But I have, it's something that I have to manage. Yeah, I'd say that.
Yes. And what about now with this COVID-19? I mean, you know, we get a lot of letters. There's a lot of anxious people, really, who ask a bit of advice, not that we're the font of all knowledge or advice, but sometimes I think it's interesting if you share your problems. They say a problem shared is a problem halved, you know.
And I'm a firm believer in that too. I'm a real, and my husband as well, we are very big on talking it out. My husband can suffer from a bit of anxiety, and a big thing for us when we hit something that is a bit of a fork in the road, we have to talk it out, because obviously, well, in our experience anyway, is that the more you can talk through it, the less your own thoughts don't become the enemy. Because I think there's nothing worse than sitting in your own thoughts and just you kind of end up being on a bit of a spinning on a bit of a wheel, and things can just escalate in your own mind. But talking them out and getting someone else's opinion, and also sometimes just hearing it out loud, what your fear might be or what your anxiety might be. I mean, in this situation with the pandemic that's going on at the moment, I feel very fortunate being in New Zealand, and I feeling like we've got great leadership. I have a huge amount of faith in our leadership, but I know that's not the case. And obviously, my family, we are in a fortunate position where my husband can still work, but I also know that that's not the case for a lot of people. So everybody, I think, will be having such a different journey through this terrible time. But I suppose it's just how we'll come out the other side and how we can interact with each other that will show the way that we'll be moving forward. But yeah, as I say, my family, at least at this time, is in a position where we're not too concerned. And I think New Zealand is very lucky that we've moved through it very quickly without too many instances of losses, which are loss of lives, which is really fortunate.
Yes, no, I agree. And I have great admiration for the Prime Minister Jacinta, who's must be quite inspirational. She's a mother herself. She's got a year old girl.
So, I mean, I think there's been lots of memes going around on social media. There's not many leaders of the nation who have been through, you know, terrorist shootings and, you know, volcanic eruptions and, you know, a terrible pandemic in their first term of leading a country.
It's just amazing. And it's it just shows, you know, yeah, she's, again, a very maternal, steadying, calming leader. I admire her very, very much. And I echo what you're saying, Tori. I mean, we're my family as well. We're blessed, and I, you know, there's a lot of people who are suffering grief and loss, and you know, if they've lost their loved ones with this terrible virus, and it's just your heart aches for them. And also people, as you say, who are fiscally hurt and unemployed or can't pay the mortgage. It's horrendous, really. So we're very lucky, aren't we, really, that but the key is I do believe it's important, as you rightly say, to talking problems and not to feel ashamed or down, to pick up the phone and say, look, I'm struggling, I need some help. And that's very, very positive. And
I really agree with that. I think, yeah, being able to talk and ask for help is a real sign of strength more than anything, because it's the hardest to say when you're vulnerable.
No, that's right. And it's interesting, you know, that, and again, Celine was probably born in many ways. When I was 14 years old, my best friend committed suicide. And that had a profound effect on me, Tori. It was quite amazing. Oh, it was horrendous. And it was the type of thing where that particular night where we were walking home, and he seemed a bit down, you know, but and he wanted to have a chat. And I said, oh, we'll catch up tomorrow. And you know, I was tired and just wanted to get home. And then the next day his dad came and said, you know, he killed himself. You know, it was just I was devastated. And, you know, and even to this day, it's quite amazing. I mean, so with your storylines, you know, when Salim was going through that, and I suppose you don't know really, you try and, even as we're speaking today, you know, it's a, you know, you try and reach out to those people that, you know, depression is very prevalent in our lives, unfortunately, around the world. And so, you know, we always say, you know, anybody, you're too special, you're too precious. You know, if you're ever needing, always reach out and talk. Don't, you know, it's very, very important. And, you know, I can't emphasize that enough. And it's amazing that, so I'm tearing up here, Tori. I must pull myself together and get on to some other thoughts. But
it is around the world, but we've got terrible statistics in New Zealand around depression and things. And my family has it in the family. And it is one of those terrible things that that needs to be more in the forefront of people's minds, because people tend to, you know, sweep it under the rug. So I think you're very, it was amazing that you were able to include it in such a way that you did. And in a children's television show where it was able to be spoken about in a way that was palatable almost.
It's very important, particularly for young people in their teens, and peer pressure and stresses and all the hassle. It's, you know, it is. And so I think it's a little more prevalent than, I guarantee you probably there's very few people listening to this that don't know of somebody who has mental health, you know, depression or difficulties or anxieties. And so as a caring civil society in keeping the dream alive, and it's important, as you rightly say, to be interconnected. And this is an old hippie speaking, but to love is all omnipotent. You know, it can really... it can solve a lot of problems, and communication into love, and to give love and receive love. Yeah, it's very, very important.
I think kindness is one of those things that is just overlooked so much nowadays, especially with the amount of online communication that happens. People feel almost that they don't have the same sort of responsibility to be kind to one another. Yeah. And I just think it's so important that, if, you know, that old saying, if you don't have anything nice to say, you need to be quiet, you know, don't say anything at all.
And I mean, technology is a good thing. And we've discussed this in the podcast. And I mean, when I sit today thinking, this is unbelievable. Here, you and I are speaking, you're in New Zealand, I'm here, and the listeners are listening wherever they are in the world. Yeah. How does this work? I mean, how are we able to do this? I mean, it just blows my mind. So I've utmost respect and embrace it. But at the same time, a lot of the social media, it's reduced to sound bites and so many characters and not meaningful discussion, really. And I think that's what my worry is. And that's why we explored that, obviously, with the Paradise program with Ram and the technos, to try and show what possibly can happen if we don't utilize technology in a responsible way, you know. And so it's interesting. So Tori, I've got some questions, and if you bear with me, we've got a lot of questions from our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and more importantly, we've got a lot of emails coming in. So I'm going to try and whiz through a few, if you don't mind, and let the fans ask some questions here. So we got one from Sarah Maddox. Good morning, Sarah. So her question, Tori, is if they could do the Tribe Season 6, what do you think would happen for your character? And where would the story take her? Now, Tori, if I could just interrupt, you know about the books and that. But so let's forget about the books, because some of the fans will have read the books and we don't want to get into spoilers. So this is just in your imagination, Tori. What would you have liked the story? I mean, if it's where do you think she should have gone, your character?
I think for Celine, I think she would continue on with her newfound strength that she developed in season 5. I think she'd become more of an opinionated, more of a leader. I think she would have found someone. I think her love and her nurturing side would come out, and I think she would probably want to find someone to spend her life with. I think that would be a really important part of her storyline, whether that would happen in the short term or further down the track. And I think she probably would have wanted to start a family at some stage. But I think for her new, considering her journey, I really think that her newfound kind of independence and strength would be really important and paramount in her storyline as it continues. Yeah.
And that's, I agree entirely there. Well done. So I've got one now from Dana Winkler. Good morning, Dana. Hi, Victoria. I hope you are well in this difficult time. My question is, Celine had to deal with a lot of hard things in her life, rejection of Bray, bulimia, losing her baby, and pride. What was the most challenging to play for you? And what were the most fun scenes to film with the cast?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say the most challenging, it probably would have been the bulimia, because it was a long storyline. Well, it felt to me when I was young, it was a long storyline where I was spending every scene in a very low place. And usually I would be able to kind of click myself out quite easily. But I have to admit, when the majority, if not all of my scenes at this period of time when we were filming, I would say that because of the kind of low situation or low state of mental health that she was in, I think that probably would have been my hardest, because I, you do start to feel it, obviously. I felt compassion for her. And because of her state, she wasn't really interacting with a lot of other characters either, which meant a lot of my scenes were by myself or with someone else. So it was almost a bit of a tailspin. But I enjoyed the fact that it had so much importance to so many people. But I definitely think that was probably the hardest. In terms of fun scenes, I always loved, though it wouldn't be fair because the crew did not love them as much, when we had whole cast scenes, so when there was all 15 or so of us, I always loved those because it was so much camaraderie between us and there were so many giggles. I always loved my scenes with Meryl, because we often shared a room and so we were bestest of friends, and we often were told off for laughing so much, which was always hilarious, not again for the crew. And I always loved any of the outdoor scenes. I always loved shooting on location. And definitely one of my favourite memories, I can't remember which season it was actually in, when I got to ride the horse very briefly, but I got to ride it.
Now, there's an interesting segue into a question from Isabella Milne. Good morning, Isabella. Isabella's got a lot of different questions here, but I'll just, because some of them repeat Isabella, so I won't ask all of them, but Isabel is asking, what was it like to ride a horse, or to even get a chance to get near one?
Yeah, that is a good question. I actually love horses. They're one of my favourite animals. So I had ridden. I was very fortunate enough to have ridden horses before. Unfortunately, because of obviously the need for me to continue filming and the safety of me while we were filming, I only got to really ride it briefly. I think there was a couple of shots of me getting on and off the horse and trotting off. But unfortunately, I didn't get to do any of the cantering scenes or the galloping off scenes. But no, I do enjoy and I love riding horses. So thankfully, I had been around them before, so I wasn't nervous or anything like that.
That's nice. Well done. Good morning, Kate McDonald. I got one from Kate. Thank you for your question, Kate. So I'll just read this out to Tori. Hi, lovely. I'd love to know how hard it was to upkeep your red hair. I would have fallen out from all the dying of it. And also, did you enjoy working on Atlantis Science? Well, it's a tribe. It was a crazy show. So with your hair, Tori, you probably had to go through, like we Mike was saying, had to be dyed blonde, then it was red and used to sting, did it? I don't know.
Yes, oh my goodness, the bleaching. The bleaching was the most painful. And I think as the series went on, I think we all got a bit better at doing it in a more efficient way. But initially, when it was the whole head of hair was bleached, and if it was left on even a fraction too long, it would almost give you, I know this sounds disgusting, but cornflakes in your hair, because it would burn your scalp. And then the colour itself was fine. That just got pasted on and then left in. But I have to say, I for the whole shooting of the 5 years of filming Tribe, I don't think I ever owned anything white or cream or of a light colour, because the collar line was always a nice pinky red colour. But no, and my pillowcases as well. But to be honest, I actually loved having the red hair. I actually thought I was one of the luckier ones. When it was that really blood red, I loved it. I loved it. And I loved being able to come back up to Auckland when I'd be seeing my friends, and I'd be able to walk onto my school campus and people, you know, I'd stick out like a sore thumb. But no, I did love that. And in terms of Atlantis, I loved filming Atlantis High. It was so ridiculous and so funny. And the fact that I got to play a boy and a girl, which was hilarious. And I think we got to work with wonderful actors. And I think I was a bit older as well. I think we filmed it between the last two seasons of Tribe.
That's right.
Yeah, so I think it was lovely, actually. And we had a lot of fun. And I just think the costumes, and I loved that. Was it Antonio? Antonia, my character. She was fabulous. She had great costumes.
It was just crazy, wasn't it? I mean, when I look back on that, and I think, my God, where was my mind? You know, because I mean, it's just, and you know, Tori, that the Tribe has always been this cult kind of underground classic that didn't go into the mainstream, so to speak, you know, with quite a big fanatical fan base. Within that the Atlantis Eye is creeping up from behind, where it's finding an audience and people are just loving the zaniness, the craziness of it. And I think you did tremendously well. It wasn't easy, you know, to play, I mean, Anthony and Antonia, who actually love with each other, which is really weird.
It was so good. And I think actually I always remember lying in bed when I'd be reading the scripts when we'd get them sent, and I would be just in hysterics because it really appeals to my sense of humor. So no, it was so much fun. And as I say, we got to work, like, all of the cast was so fantastic, and everyone just, it was one of those set every day was just a really fun place to be. Yeah, so we had lots of laughs on that shoot.
Yeah, no, I, it's one of my favourites, I have to say. That, and I had the pleasure of directing you in the first three episodes. I enjoyed that very much. And,
right.
And you were terrific to work with, both as a director and also as a producer. That so no, I mean, I'm, it's a big, big. I hold it in great stead. Now, Tori, I've got another one from Janka, J-A-N-K-A. Janka Helmer. Good morning, Janka. I liked your role in the bright red hair. It was one of the reasons why I tried to colour it the same when I was younger. So I saw deleted scenes about the kiss between May and Celine. How do you think about this storyline, and should it have been kept in the series without deleting?
I thought it was a great storyline. I can understand why it might not have been. I think the story progressed in a way that felt natural, the way that it was went onto screen. But I think when Laura and I were filming it, it made sense, and it was absolutely, like, her and I both understood why our characters would have been in that position, and why they would have, and why they were kind of brought together. They did have a chemistry, I thought. But yeah, I can see both ways. It would have been great to have it in there, but I can also see why it might have been taken out as well, because the storyline progressed in a really natural way with their characters the way they were.
Yeah, I mean, and I could just add to that, if I may, Tori, that Janika, what happens in the world of broadcasting, that it's actually very strictly regulated in different countries, and creatively we wanted to explore sexuality and you know, people coming to terms with their sexuality and experimenting and exploring that. But some of the broadcasters, because the Tribe was labeled as a so-called children's series, where I think it was more universal, you know, it appealed to different ages, so we couldn't really get into it. So we had no choice editorially. We were kind of inhibited to explored, and we of course did in the books. So for any tribal brothers and sisters who want to see how that progresses, we were able to, in the books, really go for it without the restrictions and restraints. So, but a good question, Janneke. I've got one, Tori, from John Nada. Good morning, John. The style of clothing the cats wore by your designers later in the season. Did you ever come up with your own styles to wear in the episodes? Some were stunning with the female styles. Just saying peace to all, that's there. So did you enjoy your, did you have a favourite costume?
I did. My, I actually had quite a few favourite costumes. I have to admit, when we were a bit younger and our bodies were doing all sorts of crazy things, I do remember feeling slightly uncomfortable in some of them. But I remember as the seasons went on, I feel like I got more comfortable in my skin, and the types of outfits we were wearing were so incredible. I personally didn't have any say. I am terrible at any kind of creative vision, so I wouldn't have been good in that respect at all. But I remember just being in awe of some of the costumes. I remember my wedding outfit. I actually still have it. It's just downstairs in my son's bedroom closet. It was just beautiful. I wish I could still fit it, but that was probably my favourite. And then I think probably one of the last season, my outfit I loved. It was so comfortable and so bright and funky, and I thought really kind of empowered Celine's strength in that last season. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Well done. That is one now from Suzanne Fischer, I think it is. Did you like the trip to Germany back in 2002? I met you all, and it felt so amazing. So good morning, Suzanne. You'll remember meeting Tori. How was that, Tori, for you? Because celebrity, in New Zealand, as we've often said in the podcast, that you were relatively anonymous, and you'd then get on a plane and arrive somewhere and have screaming fans. And how did that affect you, do you think?
It was beyond surreal, I have to say. Yeah, it was so lovely to meet all the fans, you included, Suzanne. It was so wonderful, and it was very strange, though, as you were saying, Ray, coming from New Zealand, where we were in our own little bubble in Wellington, filming in our own little family, and then getting to Germany especially, where the fans were just so phenomenal and so impassioned. And I remember saying to one of the guys, I think it was Mikey, that I had sore cheeks from just kind of smiling the whole time. Well, because I was just in this state of euphoria. It was the most surreal, fantastic experience. And getting to put faces to letters that we had received. And I remember in Dragon Con as well, when we were in the States, that was incredible, and getting to meet all these wonderful people. But the Europe trip in 2002 definitely stands out in my mind as one of my favourite promotional things that we got to do.
So from Colette Francis, good morning, Colette. Would you like to do another series, like a future version of What Happened? Did the kids grow into adults, or does the virus return at some point? At a certain age. So, do you miss acting, Tori? Would you ever get back to it, do you think?
Yeah, to be honest, I have to admit I do. I would absolutely love to do something like that. I think it was one of those natural things that, reflecting on my on when I came out of the tribe, I was excited to get back to a sense of normalcy. But after a wee while, I really, really realised how what an amazing experience it was. And I think when I was going back into university, I really got caught up in the fantastic time of being back with my friends and kind of living a typical university life. And I just stopped doing auditions because it became hard while I was doing papers and whatnot. And I just don't think I pushed myself as much as I should have. And then it got to the stage, and I have to admit, where I got a bit nervous about getting back into it. And then I fell into public relations. And then, as I say, then I fell into teaching, which I have no regrets whatsoever. But I definitely miss acting. It would be something that at the moment, obviously with my raising a family at the moment, would be a little bit harder than normal, perhaps. I kept in my finger in a pie, I suppose, when I was in primary school teaching. I produced a couple of plays with the kids, and so that was kind of how I kept my creative buzz going. and took a glee club and things like that. But in terms of myself being able to take part in it, it is definitely something that I'd always be open to.
Isn't that great? That, yeah, I suppose it's, again, we always say for people with that kind of creative spark, that need, it never leaves you, I think, you know. It's something you always, it's always there, and it's like I say, if you, it's an itch that you've got to scratch. It's
absolutely. And I'll tell you something, Ray, one of my, when I was and when I was working back at my first school that I was teaching at, one of my girlfriends there, she came up with a great idea to take part in a synchronized swimming group. And we were called the Wet Hot Beauties. And it was absolutely hilarious. And we, I mean, it wasn't really synchronized swimming. It was more like synchronized wading. And these amazing women in Auckland who are part of the industry came up with these great dances and storylines. We did Swan Lake one year, all in a pool.
Wow.
And that was a great way of me kind of keeping up with my, as you say, my creative side and getting to wear theatrical makeup again and getting to dance, which I absolutely love. But no, that was hilarious. So I think I did three seasons of Wet Hot Beauties and then got pregnant. So then I wasn't really able to float as well.
and so swimming and dancing, and do you have any other hobbies, Tori?
I dancing would probably be, I don't do it nearly as much but as I should, but I think that's where I get my main passion from. I have so much enjoyment of dancing. I love to read, again, probably don't do that as much at the moment as I should, and going for walks, I'd say that, and horse riding, but again, not as much as I would like to.
It's interesting that, and what about music? What kind of music do you listen to?
I'm very eclectic. I everything from anything pop, anything kind of, I suppose, a bit of rock as well. I love Pearl Jam. I love, it's so hard. I mean, I probably wouldn't actually say I've got one specific band or one specific singer. I do listen to a lot of pop and a lot of R&B. But otherwise I often listen to what my husband listens to, which is the majority Pearl Jam.
Okay, no, that's a good band. I like that kind of music as well. That,
yeah.
So I've got one from our Tribe TV series from YouTube channel, Kendall and the Dog Squad. This is from Kendall. Good morning, Kendall and the Dogs. That's a fascinating name that I'm now interested. What does it mean, Kendall and the Dog Squad? So maybe Kendall looks after kennels or something, I don't know. But so Kendall, did you find that showing that side of your character had a positive effect on any fans that helped them deal with or understand a situation they were in? I think Kendall's referring to all the alcoholism, the suicide. We've touched on it a bit, but were you aware at all, Tori, when you were filming it, that it would touch so many people, your storylines?
To be honest, and I suppose this was because I was, you know, quite young, I didn't really think about it too much until after we'd shot it. And I suppose that was because I was in my own little bubble of trying to figure out the best way of portraying it in an authentic way. But I was so touched, I think, afterwards when I found that it had such an effect. And I think the variety of different kind of demons that Celine had to wrestle with made her really approachable and really a sympathetic character to kind of talk with and interact with. She had so many different things that she dealt with, but I think I definitely think the bulimia and the alcohol, I actually forgot about the alcoholism. There were so many things that she dealt with. Absolutely. I think she had to deal with quite a few things. And I think a huge part of that was about rejection and her kind of emotional state as well. But it was always so heartwarming when we got correspondence from people saying that it had helped them in a positive way. And that was always really fulfilling.
I've got one now from our Instagram account from Sammy Hag. Good morning, Sammy. Hi, Victoria. I just want to say you were wonderful on The Tribe. And I was wondering, how did you get the part of Celine? And what was it like working with Ryan Runciman, a.k.a. Ryan, on set?
So how I got the part, I actually auditioned for the part of Trudy, and I think Meryl had auditioned for Celine. And so, but then I'd been told I was playing the part of Celine. So we got down and we had this very interesting conversation of being like, who's playing who? But we were both so excited when we realized, you know, that I was at Celine and she was Ebony. And I do remember there was a long period of time between my audition and when my dad actually, I was riding my bike down the road and he pulled over, he was driving past me and he pulled over and said, "You got the job." And I remember being so excited. So that's kind of how that aired out. And in terms of working with Ryan, it was awesome actually, because I didn't realize until we got down to Wellington that he was there. We obviously had known each other from filming The Duelist earlier in the year. And we'd had a couple of laughs on that. And then obviously as Celine and Ryan's storyline developed, that was really nice because obviously we spent so much time together and he was a hoot. He's such an intelligent, quick-witted dude that it was always a real laugh to work with him on set.
Well done. I've got another one from our Instagram account. This is from BNWM5. Or S Turbo. That's an interesting name from Sweden. I don't know, but so such a beautiful and powerful character inside and out. I didn't really know how much about my eating disorders until I saw Celine. Extremely gripping and powerful. I suppose my question would be, did this have any impact on your real life or the great actor that you are? It didn't phase you. Did it affect your real life, Tori, do you think, around that time you were?
No, I that was very sweet of you to say. I think I was very fortunate. I haven't experienced any eating difficulties, but I think it was one of those things that being aware that it was such a prominent thing amongst young teenagers, well, actually people of any age, it was very much a real responsibility I found to do that role. And I don't think it had any kind of impact on me personally, apart from the fact that I did find it hard, as I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, kind of being in that state of, I think, you know, she was also dealing with a bit of depression, with depression as well, and that kind of lack of self-confidence. But I think her journey was really beautifully kind of laid out afterwards and how she kind of managed to get through that with Ryan, and find her inner strength, I suppose, to get through that really, really hard time. But I'm so pleased to hear that it helped you. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Tori. We've got one from our YouTube page that's from Faith19Life. Good morning, Faith19Life. I hope you're doing well. And so I remember watching this when young and thought the bulimia storyline was very relevant to young girls, especially as I went to an all-girls school and saw a lot of this eating disorder behaviours. How did you prepare for such a relevant and hard storyline?
I wouldn't say I did a huge amount of preparation apart from, so I came from an all-girls school as well, and I wouldn't say it was hugely in the forefront of my kind of social group, but we all knew at least one person who had dealt with some form of eating disorder, whether it was really extreme or issues around self-esteem and things like that. I knew a couple of cases like that. So in fact, in terms of preparation, I suppose mine was more anecdotal. And as the journey went on, being able to read the script and kind of try and figure out how Celine would deal with such a heart-wrenching disorder, kind of became a lot more natural to me as I figured out her as well and how to play her and how she would deal with such an extreme issue.
I've got one from our Instagram account, Lala Louie, I think it is. What is your favourite quote? Or do you have general advice about life? That's quite that's a hard question, but do you have any quote that you like?
I don't know if I have a favourite quote, but I have a favourite book, which I feel like encompasses all walks of life, and that's the Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You'll Go. I feel like often there are so many great, wonderful life lessons, and I read it to my son quite often, my oldest son, Matthew. And I feel like there are lots of wonderful learnings within the Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, and about having learning how to wait and learning about disappointment, but learning about success and learning about pushing yourself and how to make decisions in life. And I think it's, I think it works in so many different ways and in so many different situations. I use it as a bit of a life guide, to be honest.
That's nice. And do you have any unrealized ambitions, Tori, anything on your bucket list, travel or countries you'd like to visit?
Definitely travel. I always love to travel. My husband and I have been fortunate enough, lucky enough in the last, probably just before my boys were born, to do some more of Europe and things. And I don't think I'll ever get sick of being able to travel, which is a very fortunate position to be in. But I can't wait to do more when I'm in a position to do so. In terms of bucket lists, I need to teach myself how to play the guitar. That's something that I'm on my list to do. And I would love to continue to perform in some way, shape, or form. But I think I think those would be my main things that I'd like to continue to do, or at least start to do, especially with learning to do more music.
That's nice. And with your boys, if they wanted to get into the business or were creative, would you encourage them, Tori? Would you support them?
Oh, absolutely. I'm big on them trying to figure out their own way. My husband and I often kind of talk about the fact that as long as they come out kind, we feel like we will have done a good job. As long as they are global citizens and kind individuals, yeah, I feel like that's a bit of a parenting win if we can accomplish that.
Well, that's terrific. I've got an email here, which is an interesting one from Nathan Gale. And so, hi, I'm Nathan from the UK. I just wanted to congratulate you and the rest of the cast on 20 years of the tribe. During this difficult time for all of us, my family are keeping routine and watching 5 episodes a day, every day till the end. My wife watched this entire series when the show was first aired. Honestly, watching the tribe has been invigorating and has kept my family closer. So thank you, Ray and Tori. Stay safe. P.S. If it's okay, could you message back in a small video, which we can't do, Nathan, but at least we can say hi to you and your family.
Hi, Nathan and your family. Thank you so much for all your support. And that's incredible that you are able to watch 5 episodes a day throughout this crazy, crazy time we're all going through. And thank you so much for all your wonderful support. It's really touching. Thank you so much.
It's lovely. And I'm just looking at the family is Leanne, Josh, Oliver and Jackson. Leanne, Josh, Oliver and Jackson. So from Tori and I to Leanne, Josh, Oliver and Jackson, and obviously to Nathan, hi, and keep watching keep watching till the end and read the books, and then we'll hopefully, maybe, who knows, Tori, we might end up working together on a sequel or a new project or whatever, but the story continues if you keep the dream alive, and whatever that dream might be. And Tori, just one thing, I was just thinking, I'm sitting here eating a chocolate and feeling very guilty, actually, when I was reading the last question about bulimia. Isn't it weird how everything that's bad for us tastes so good?
Very true. I think over the Easter period, I went through about 18 hot cross buns covered in butter.
Isn't it weird? It's the weirdest thing. And I've found, I mean, you know, I have a very addictive personality and can probably relate to Celine, you know, very, very much, because, I mean, I just, since this lockdown, you know, because I'm off the vineyard, I don't have access to my Pinot Noir, which is a good thing. But the bad thing is I keep looking for chocolates and I can't work it out. And that's what I'm thinking, what gives me comfort about this? And then I worry when I eat it, I think, oh my goodness, I'm going to put on weight. This isn't good for me. Maybe I should eat carrots. Then carrots. And then I think, I don't like the taste of these carrots. I prefer the chocolates.
I'm with you. Chocolate over carrots any day. Yeah, I have to admit, the lockdown, I've started baking, and I never bake. I'm much more of a cook. But I've been cooking biscuits and bread and brownies, and I, of course, then I have to eat it all. And I think I open the pantry and the fridge door about 500 times a day. I'm feeding my son snack after snack after snack, whether it's to curtail a tantrum or keep him occupied while I'm trying to deal with my tiniest one. The eating has been a big part of our lockdown experience at the moment. But you know, you're right, having all those tasty treats, I don't know, they all seem to be so terrible for us. But I figure if we can balance it out with walking or running or dance or whatever exercise you're into.
Yeah, I'm just picturing me trying to run around with a box of chocolates while I run, you know. I'll try that. Tori, there's one interesting thing about cooking in that, and I'm always fascinated, and this is a question from me to you. What was if you could pick anything that your mum made for you, what's your favourite dish?
Lasagna, straight off the bat. Always my favorite thing to eat, my favorite thing to cook, my favorite thing that my mum used to make. I feel like it's comfort food. Italian would be always my favorite choice, I think, in the first place. But yeah, the lasagna that I make requires cream and butter and milk and bacon or pancetta. So it's completely indulgent, and I try and have it at least probably once every couple of weeks.
Is that your mum's recipe, an old family recipe?
Well, no, actually, it's a bit of a variation. It's a bit of my mum's. And then when my husband and I were lucky enough to go to Italy quite a few years ago now, we picked up a recipe which was very, very naughty with all these extra ingredients that I would have never thought to include. And now it's a bit of my mum's and a bit of this new one that we found in Italy.
Yeah, so it's fascinating, you know, because I'm just fascinated what everybody's mum's favorite, you know, everybody has a mum and their mum's cooking. My one is a thing called Stovies, which is a very simple, my mother used to make it, and it was in post-war Britain where there wasn't a lot of money around. And it's just like something like gravy and onions and potatoes and very basic, really, but I love it. And what is interesting, your two boys, that when they're older and they're going to get married and their wife is going to struggle to make the lasagna as good as their mum made. And my poor wife is for over 50 years and she can't get it right. You know, she's tried, but it doesn't taste like my old mum's, bless her, you know. And so it's interesting because each thing usually tells a story, you know.
Yeah, and maybe,
yeah, so you cooking today, it could be handed down in 20 years from now. Your children will say, oh, my mum, it was during the 2020 lockdown and she was bored and did some baking and that's where this special recipe came. And I've grown up tasting this and I feel it's comfort. It gives you, I don't know if it's the taste of Stovey.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think food is one of those wonderful things that give you memories and makes you reminisce. Yeah. My dad actually did a lot of the cooking when we were growing up, because my mum worked quite a few jobs, and he's a lot older. He's in his mid-80s, and so he grew up without a dad, who died just after the war. And so he grew up on meat and veg, and everything was kind of boiled within an inch of its life. And meat, so it was meat and three veg. That's what we had when we were growing up. So lasagna was always very fancy when mum made it. But for the most part, it was definitely a lot of boiled carrots with brown sugar and cabbage and meat and potatoes. And that's a lot of what we ate.
Do you have one of your dad's favorite recipes that you would die to have that you'd love?
I don't. Dad was great at putting the meals on the table, but the meals themselves weren't particularly flavorsome. He did try his hand at being creative a couple of times with a stew, but sometimes he'd just put too many ingredients in. But no, I think probably Dad always did a really good schnitzel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was, I think that was one of his fancier creations that he would do that we quite enjoyed.
That sounds terrific. Well, you know, Tori, our hour has flown by, so I'd just wonder if there's anything in closing you'd like to say to the fans, I mean, either about the 20th anniversary or COVID before we close. Any final thoughts?
Most importantly, I just want to say thank you so much for all your all of the fans' kind of ongoing support and love and comments and messages. It always gives me a huge amount of joy to go onto the Tribe Instagram page and see the comments or see the photos that have been posted, and receiving drawings and things like that. It always really warms my heart, and I'm looking forward to so much to showing my two boys this amazing adventure that I got to go on when they're a bit older. And so thank you so much for being able to support it and for enabling it to happen, because obviously without you guys, it just wouldn't have come about and been so wonderfully received. And it really does just touch my heart. So thank you all so much. And thank you to you, Ray, as well, for making it happen.
Oh, that's lovely, Tori. Thank you. I'd just like to echo Tori's thoughts to all of you out there in Tribe World, to, as always, to thank you for your support and for being there for us. And I'm sure you'd like to join me in thanking Tori for taking this time to give something back as well, and to support you with this podcast. Tori, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you take care of yourself and your lovely husband and two boys there, and keep feeding them those buns and cakes. And you'll have to bring some.
Thank you so much, Ray. I really appreciate it.
And you'll have to come down and visit me on the vineyard and bring those cakes as well for me.
I will be there in a heartbeat.
No, fantastic. And we'll do that. And so lots of love to you. You take care of yourself, and we'll catch up again very soon. Bye-bye for now.
Thanks, Ray. Bye.
Bye-bye.